brand.
Quite a lot of side effect, actually. Not particularly easy.
No.
Which I think maybe my life is like.
Yeah. What do you want it to be? What do you want your legacy? What do you want people to be saying about you? Yeah. Other thoughts? Do you want to say something?
People are reticent in giving you honest feedback. People are like, oh, you know.
Yes. It's like, that doesn't help. Yeah. So I think they're right. And what they're like, you know, be very thoughtful about who you choose to give you feedback.
The other thing I thought, was reading this article and then listening to that as well, is that it's all well and good saying what you want to be, but if you aren't actually that anyway, then it's going to make you so, like, you would see straight through that, surely, and it comes down to the authenticity side of things. So it's a nice exercise to do, but you kind of, you are what you are, really, at the end of the day.
Yeah, I had a similar point in the chat here. I was thinking about what I really wanted to be, and then I was looking through all the words, and I thought, actually, I'd much rather look at who I am now and build on that. I mean, there's different ways to do it, but that felt a lot more authentic to me.
Does it say then in the article what do you want to be? Does it not say what are your current values? What are your...
I thought there was an aspirational element.
Fine. There may be things. I mean, what I tend to say is always choose two that are your core, that build on your strengths, that is a real, you know, what you stand for, and one that might be developmental. So there could be two or three areas that this is what you're about. This is your core. This is what you're known for. You know, based around what you bring to the business or to your leadership. But I think having one that's developmental is okay. But yes, I don't think you should build a brand around something that you're not. I think that's impossible, in fact, because you live and breathe your brand daily through your daily actions, your interactions, you know, through your behaviour, what you say, how you say it, how you really interact with people. So yeah, maybe the article was a bit too American in this. You know, be this, be the perfect. But no, I think you have to. Part of this is the self, which is really the self-reflection piece, which is, who are you? Yeah, which is the whole true north, authenticity, authentic leadership piece about what's your story, how come you are the way you are today. Do you know who you are today? Do you know what your strengths are? Do you know what your weaknesses are? Do you know what your values are? What you're willing to be disliked for? And I definitely, wholeheartedly agree that it should be based on who I am. However, there should be a developmental piece in there because we, you know, we all need to improve, and part of that is based around feedback. Is you know, you're saying that gets off his wife.
You could have certain leadership traits. Like, I think of myself like driven, focused, results oriented, etc. And through my career, it's my behaviours that have changed to influence the impact of that. So even just within that,
you
can be significant.
Definitely.
Development and how you perceive as a leader. So I've been with you as opposed to.
And how you might exhibit those particular aspects under pressure or at stress, because all strengths turn into kind of weaknesses at an extreme. And our coping strategies and behaviours that we learn around how to manage, particularly under pressure, I think hopefully get better over time if we've got high levels of EQ. Yeah. So what I'd like you to do is just spend 15 minutes in pairs comparing and talking about what you've got through those exercises. So I'd like you to pick a partner, and I would like you to take them through what you learned, what feedback you got from other people, how that resonated, how is it beneficial. I'll probably give you till 10:50 by the time you get yourselves together and sort it. There'll be one group of three, I think. My maths done right, 2, 2, 2. Oh no, we're an even number. Unless people can move around and get a little confused. So I'll give you till 10:50, and I'd just like you to compare what you learned, what you got out of it, what did it say about your leadership, what was useful, what was not.
It's Arabic. My mum's East African. We've met before, Andrew, I'm sure. We've been on a lecture together. You look really familiar.
I get that so many times, so many different countries, locations. That I'm pretty sure I've got one of those questions.
No, I don't think so. No, I'm pretty good.
When were you graduated?
February. I did my electives last year.
I did managing strategic change with Veronica Haley as a city.
Yeah, so did I.
With full time.
Sure. No, that wasn't. Full time was over the weekend, though.
Oh no, it wasn't with full time, was it? With modular.
Yeah, it wasn't.
Were you a modular?
Yeah, no, I wasn't, but I did that elective.
Okay. I don't remember you being there. Because you're quite vocal, so I would have thought I would have.
Maybe.
I was sat there all the way through.
I'm pretty certain we were in the same one.
Okay.
I was quite vocal in that one, I think.
Were you?
Yeah.
It was the one where you had to go off in little groups and talk about loads of stuff. I got to know loads of them really well, but they were all. pretty much all modulars.
There was some full-timers over here, if I remember.
Okay.
It was a bit of a mix.
Okay. Did you down the beers with them or something?
No. Okay. I was so MBA'd out. I was literally two in my mouth. I was 10 out of 9. I was leaving at 5. I was going home. Because I did mine exec. So I was fed up. So fed up. I just wanted to go home and cry. I actually did the strengths finder thing. I don't know if you did that.
I didn't know. No, I haven't.
I was saying to you, I think I was saying earlier that I came out with learner, achiever, strategic communication, and focus, which I thought was quite interesting because I was just noting down some of the things I'm quite good at. I had honesty and directness, and innovation. I think innovation largely ties with strategic, and collaborative largely communication maybe. But I thought it was quite interesting.
The thing is, a lot of these you can tie all together in fact.
Yeah.
Say, a good communicator is probably all of it.
I really don't like this one. What does that even mean? It's a meaner thing. I think in this case it's how you articulate your ideas and to find it easier to put their thoughts into words. Good conversationalists and presenters.
But I'd say that's a really good, because a lot of people aren't able to do that.
I think
that's a good word actually. I really like that word. I'd want that word.
I like it. I just thought it was a bit vague.
Okay.
People say good at communication.
Thoughts into ideas.
Yeah,
right?
Thoughts into ideas. That's a lot better, yeah. So that was quite insightful.
There's something you can do through the careers thing that's more directed towards what sort of things you should do. But
did you? Which job?
Yeah.
Count as something really random. Like, oh, God, I don't know. Yeah.
Okay. But all of these things, is that they're a bit predisposed to how you answer the question. You can kind of see where it's going. So you do answer it in the way that you want to be perceived, right? Yeah. So I think you almost need someone
strategic.
Else. Yeah, exactly. You need someone else to do it for you in a way. But
the thing with this test is some of them don't relate. It's quite interesting. So it's not like, are you tend to be happy or sad? It was like, do you like to do X and do you like to do Y? And some of them going, well, they
you couldn't
don't
see a link.
Relate.
Okay.
So they try and trick you a little bit.
Okay. Because I did the other book one and I didn't find that.
The EQ one.
Mm-hmm. I sort of went, I can totally see what you'd have to answer to get what you want to get. But I was trying to answer it honestly.
Yeah. I think if anything, I sometimes, because I am quite an achiever and I am quite strategic, I have noticed that bulldoze is the wrong word, but I think when you're trying to push through a new strategy, I think there's an element where you can't be as inclusive as you want to be, because often you went from strategic change, there's often people who are resistant, in denial, they're way back in the change curve. So I've noticed sometimes that maybe not my EQ store down, that I was just like bulldozing few sometimes, just saying, look, this is the new strategy, and maybe not taking other people into consideration, perhaps, which I might do. But is that a product of what I'm trying to do?
Well, do you know what I've learned? Because I'm very much like that. And I've learned from reading up on this and looking back at what I've done, that one of the things they really say on getting people through change and introducing new strategies is get people on board with you and get them to come up with ideas as though it's their own.
Yeah.
So, and I often don't do that, because I take other people, I think I'll learn from everyone.
Yeah.
And they won't feed anything in that's going to be useful. They should just listen to me, because I know what we're doing, and really I don't really want to hear what you're going to say, because it's kind of irrelevant, because I'm that arrogant.
Yeah.
Right? And that's a weakness, because everyone can add value.
I spent 10 weeks.
Yeah, because looking back, there are people who I was more capable than in a lot of areas, but there will always be something that they're better than you are, even in a working. And when they come up with that, if you give them a chance to come up with that, not only might you learn something, there's a chance you might not.
Yeah.
If they like it, if they go, well, I'd like to do this, you might go, I reckon that's 80% of what the idea I had, which is 100%. But if you let them do that, they get so bought into it because they're taking their idea forward. And I really, because right, some of this stuff, I'm going to be going, yeah, because if you don't, they're not bought into what you're doing. Unless they totally love you and they're going to follow you into hell, which might be the case. You may have that, but there's always going to be people who don't.
Yeah.
But if you give them the chance to put their own bit in there, even if you don't quote that to me, but it kind of fits and you can kind of go with it, they really love that.
I feel myself tensing up when you're saying
that. I can see you doing that, because I'm like that. But
But I'm going, oh,
unless you want to get rid of the staff,
yeah,
you, know, you want them with you, don't you?
Yeah, yeah. Maybe I'm a bit too directive in that.
I used to put people's noses out of joint. Very good with senior management.
Yeah.
Crap with people below, in a lot of ways. Because I go, this is the way it is. And I am out of it. And I have to kind of go, well, actually, there's value in everyone. And even if they're not as good, you need them to be. You want them to be pushing as hard as they can in that direction. Otherwise, they're just being a hindrance to the business. You know?
I generally let them feedback, and then generally do what you want. Anyway. Yeah. Maybe that's not is that enough? Well, sometimes you feel like you've had your little say. Maybe that's enough, but maybe there's an extra step.
If you can say what would you like us to do in this arena, or whatever you're doing, how do you think this could be improved, or how do you think you could contribute? You know, and the whole idea of letting there's this awesome article which really brought this out to me. I was like, oh, man, I wish I'd done that one. I don't know if you've read it yet, but there's one about managing a supermarket, and there was some chap who, it's maybe later on in the reading, I can't remember, but you'll find it if you read through the books. But about managing a supermarket, this woman, it's about management, it's the thing about management rather than leadership, but it's a woman who had this guy who was a bit socially and liked working nights and stuff, was really good at resorting the shelves. So rather than getting on the tills and stuff, she just got him doing resorting the shelves and got him progressed into management through using that skill set. Because if someone hasn't got communication skills, they're pretty useless. But actually, they're going to have strengths. By virtue of them having that weakness, there's going to be other things they're more developed at. And this guy, and I was like, oh, that's so good. You know, find out what those guys can do. If you've got a team, you want that whole team to be optimised. Otherwise, you're not getting what you can out of those guys. That's so helpful for me. Because, you know, because if they're not like you, it's tempting to go, what they can.
We did the Myers-Briggs. I think it was a strategic change. Yeah, right. And I went and did the Myers-Briggs with all of my team. And I realised they were all like mini-me's. Going, you know what, okay. I need to sort this out. And I'm a lot more balanced with my team now. Yeah, I don't just get mini-me's. Which is kind of stupid, just having lots of little me's. It's probably nice to have a few of me's, but you need that balance, I think, a little bit
more. I guess it depends on what you're doing again. If you're like a firefighter, you probably want lots of people who are similar to you, have a good firefighter.
But there's always, I don't agree with that. Like, you want someone to have that core skill, but then if you've got a fire, there's probably a gazillion ways you can tackle it. I don't think you want a, maybe you don't all want to be bulldozers. You want someone who's a bit more strategic, or
stand back and think,
yeah.
Oh gosh, there's gas in this one.
We're all going in like lemmings. Yeah. And he's going, hold on, guys. I don't know. Yeah. It's really hard for me, I must admit. I like people that are like me.
Well, that's a human trait. You're not unique enough.
So it's really hard saying, but you think really differently. I'm not sure I like that. It's quite useful. I'm finding it quite useful. Just as a sometimes just an awareness is enough. Mm-hmm. Whereas before I was blind, I was building teams that were like me, which is quite interesting.
Yeah.
It's quite navel gazing.
So what else have you there? Did you do the other thing?
What was that?
The EQ one.
Yeah, 81, and I was pretty strong looking at myself. I was a bit weaker looking at other people. Mm-hmm. I think partly because of the nature of my role, it's largely collaborative at a senior level, and then it's more about get on with it. So like I was saying, sometimes I probably could be a bit more inclusive of other people's feelings, or at least understanding
it. The whole thing I think about anything, right, and about business, is what's in it for you, right? Not that you're a nicer manager, people are like, you forget that. You want people to work effectively.
Yeah.
That's the win for you, right? And why should you do it? Because you'll get a team that's actually putting its weight better if you allow them to fit into the little spots where they're going to really shine. And that really worked for me as a, what's in it for you? That's what's in it for you. I don't get this whole, although I don't agree with this whole thing, just being moral and nice.
Yeah,
I like to be moral and nice, but there is actually a reason to be.
Morality is slightly aside. This is more about getting people's input and this is understanding how they're feeling in order to help you execute your plan better. It's likely.
And if they're part of that plan, help them be the best wheels they can be within that machine that you're trying to change or build or whatever.
Half of me thinks, I'm getting to an age now where I figure, do I really want to go back and start changing some of these things, or do I find a niche and a place in the organisation where can be a bit more of a bulldozer and not really worry about it.
Well,
that,
if you're doing restructuring, where there's a lot of execution, you know, that's a good place for someone who's not worried about.
Yeah.
You don't fit what I think it should be like. You're out.
I work in quite a directive organisation. It's quite hierarchical.
Right.
It's largely stuff comes down, you work on your bit, you push stuff down, and there's not a whole lot of pushback. You can't go two levels up, don't agree with the strategy. It doesn't really work like that.
No, but they might not say, I don't agree with it. But if they don't agree with it,
yeah,
they're not going to be as effective as another.
No, I buy that.
As a person, yeah. It's not about them patting you on the back. You know, it's about them going off to their little cubicle or whatever and going, yes, I love working for this company and I'm going to stay on till 8 tonight and being totally driven to work and loving their job. Right? If they love their job, it's better for you because the company's going to do better.
Yeah.
And it's about people loving their job is what it's about. Not about making your life easier so you're like, oh, no one fought me on that.
I think
it's about getting them more engaged, and that can be letting them, it came out in that management change, and it's letting people give their feedback. People really love it in change if they feel like they've had the opportunity to contribute. That's a real part of humanity change. And I think it is possible to do that. It's quite easy to do that, but often when you're like, you just want to get done, it's causing not to give people that option. But I don't think it's actually that hard to give them the opportunity.
I'm experimenting.
You're saying you had these meetings, because I was thinking about what, you know, you're saying how you had meetings with your staff, and I used to have meetings, and not as regularly as I should have done. And when I did, and that allowed them to feedback, I learned all sorts of stuff.
Yeah.
And they'd come up with all sorts of ideas if I gave them space to, without thinking, I know loads about them, you know, I'm way better educated. I've had a meteor advice that you haven't because you're not good. But actually, that's a really sad way to manage because you're not going to invest out of the people. That's all feedback sessions.
Yeah, they are quite useful to get the pulse, and I think I do find them quite motivating. Not for me, but them. To get time with me, and that sounds like all the time with Aaron, but at their level, to get time with me is kind of nice for them. Just to get a bit of feedback, to air their dirty laundry and talk about their development. But what I'm doing at the moment is I've got an experiment going on with my team. So we've got not a massively strategic issue, but a semi-strategic issue. I pushed down to them and I said, look, I had an hour meeting and I said, look, here's the issue, here's the problem, go away and think about a solution. So they're going to feedback to me on Thursday, a couple of days' time. I'm going to see what they come up with. And then there's that delicate, if I don't agree, can I repackage some of their ideas so it feels like they've got some involvement? Can you almost take nothing that they've done, however they feel like they've been involved? I'm kind of going to do a little bit of an experiment. It's quite interesting. I'm not quite sure how I can push it. I mean,
but
they might come back with something amazing.
Yeah.
In which case, it's a done deal. It's easy.
Well,
they come up with something rubbish.
Yeah, but it's not easy, because if it's easy, then you haven't learned anything.
No, easy for me to then repackage their ideas and feel inclusive for them.
No, I know, but the thing is, because that's not really a challenge for you. If they come back with something that's, you go, yeah, that's awesome. Whereas if they come back and say, I'm not really sure about that, and to repackage something you're not really sure about is much more of a challenge for you. And that'd be a better option.
It'd be quite easy, because that's generally what I do.
Okay. You don't like that, but
I'll just repackage it and kind of push it up the chain. But have I then defeated? Have you like demotivated them even more, or whether the whole fact of them just getting involved and feeling like they've done something? It's a delicate line. I'm not quite sure how it's going to pan out.
I think that word authentic is quite useful. I think it has to be a level that. No, but if you say they say, oh, we want to repaint all the cars black, and you're white. We painted cars white, but okay, we painted came into, but you know, like, I think there has to be a level where.
Oh no, I'm very direct with them.
Yeah, but if you say that was all crap, in effect, obviously, I'm guessing you. Well, I say obviously, hopefully.
Yeah,
it would be quite as direct as that.
Yeah.
I mean, one of the guys on the course in my mentor group was very, very good at. We'd all be going because we had some, paid personalities, and you'd be getting.
Yeah.
And you'd go, what do you consider? And you'd come up with something completely contrasting. Whereas, if one of us came up, you must be joking, we're not doing that. he'd put it in such a gentle kind of. Like almost like you thought of it kind of way, and I don't quite know where that came from.
I quite like the whole questions based approach. and you're giving feedback like that. Because he's not saying do it like this or that's rubbish. Have you thought about X?
And it's like putting his idea in your head.
Yeah.
And it feels like you can come up with it, kind of. And I think that is that's not ever been brought up in any of but you know, if you can make people think that your ideas are their own, that's a massive skill. Because then they're like really pushing. So, that's like wow. Yeah. But also it takes a bit of humility. If you go, you know, have you thought about it? And they go, oh, yeah. And then it feels like you haven't thought of it, kind of. You know what I mean? So they're not really bigging you up for the idea. They're probably more likely to be saying, absolutely nice play. But they won't be saying, who comes up with so many good ideas? So it's a trade-off. You have to be willing to almost give up the prestige of that idea.
This is where this whole personal leadership brand I find a little bit difficult, because to my team, and then when I'm facing off to say directors, I probably have two different brands, and there's that whole authentic piece.
I wrote something like that. Yeah.
They're talking about knocking down the walls, weren't they, between your personal and your private lives?
Well, I found it really interesting, because there was another one of these things, and I wrote chameleon on it, because I'm a total chameleon.
I think I'm as well.
I had a bit of a drama. Here it goes. But my life sort of contributes to that. I'm first generation born here, and I went to primary school, grew up in a rough estate, you know, all sorts of
millions of random, yeah.
You know, I wrote Skater and Sue.
Okay.
And I don't
know what's
bad to be.
I know that talking about yourself can take up as long as
talks about
a whole evening, a whole day, but which I just wanted you to get some sanity check and hopefully. You'll have seen that sanity check in facial expressions of the person opposite you when you were saying, this is what I think my leadership is, and they're either going, yes, or you've got to be kidding. So I would encourage you to, you know, you've all worked with, you know, most of you, I suspect, have worked with each other for quite a while. I'm a great believer that, you know, you don't have a work persona and a persona, a student persona, and a home persona. I'm not a great believer of that. I think we can learn certain behaviours at work that maybe we have less control over at home, but I think our true essence seeps out wherever we are. Definitely. And certainly from my observations of people over time, which is kind of what I do for fun and for my job, we tend to find there are certain consistencies. And if there aren't, then you tend to find people get sick, frankly, because they're trying to manage two different personas, and that's quite difficult for a normal functioning human being. Any thoughts or questions that came out of your discussions, or anything that resonated as you were talking through your work that you did over the week around your brand?
Well, sir, I think some of the strengths or goes down to the cultural personalities, and because I can see that I may have similar critical strengths or weaknesses with someone who may have become either from same country or same region, or other basically people who has grown up in different countries may have developed different skills. So I can say, for example, possibly you are more analytical if you are in a society where it is more entrepreneurial, possibly. Or you are more diplomacy when you work in people like the US or UK. I can see that people get more communication and something that we may not have developed that well because of the entrepreneurial and independent still of
work. No, I think that's an interesting perspective. And certainly I know I've ended up coaching quite a lot of them. Again, I'm generalising here, so if anyone's got Germanic blood, don't be offended. But I've ended up coaching a lot of people from the Germanic countries over their direct style. In the UK, it doesn't always resonate as well. I mean, I'm very direct, so with me it's fine, for example. But for other people it doesn't. So I think there are, and then you might find, again, stereotyping, an American over here from New York may come across as brash and loud, exuberant, and therefore be seen as a development area. So I think there are certain cultural behaviours or ways of being that we can look at. And I guess what I would do is then if we peel that down to the core of that person, that's what we're getting to for the leadership essence, but I completely agree with you. There are certain cultural bits that when you're in a certain country, you have to change it. Like me, I'm fairly direct, I'm fairly loud, you know, I come across as confident. So when I go to Asia, for example, I have to be really careful how I come across. And you know, the feedback I initially got was, yeah, too loud, too boisterous, too directive, too challenging. Whereas over here, you know, that's often what people want. No, I think it's very true. But I guess when we're thinking about brand, what I'm getting you to do is really think about, yeah, you. The second part of that, which is the other half of emotional intelligence, is where do I demonstrate it? And that's where always think of your brand as a graphic equalizer, and you will tune some things up and others down. So whether I'm working here or in Asia or in the States, my essence, I'm still me. I don't change me, which gets back to the point we're making over here about, you know, I can't create something I'm not. I completely agree with you. However, I will change certain elements of me, but I don't change who I am. So I think it's really important to recognise cultural element, but I wouldn't want us to, not that you're saying this, but hide behind it to say, well, this is just my culture. It's about who am I really? But yeah, it's a good point. And I think we do. We have to adapt. And I think we have to adapt anyway. We adapt our brands. You know, like Branson, we talked about him last week, didn't we? And he adapts his brand. But you still know who he is. He's still the same guy. You still know what he stands for, but he will adapt it dependent on the environment and the situation. Which I think is great leadership, because he's savvy, like, he's socially savvy. But the first piece is, let's get the self-awareness piece right. Other thoughts came out of your discussions?
Listen to Gail. It did make me realise, actually, if we're thinking about a brand, and we think about a company we're going to join, not to fall into a trap of trying to be the right fit for that organisation, because your organisation's, you said, bureaucratic.
Yeah.
But actually, your style and your high formula is actually
it's more
pushing,
high energy.
Pushing through that. Yeah. So therefore, actually, that's probably added value for their organisation. Probably why.
If they're ready for it, though, isn't it?
Yeah.
That's the point. And some of the points you're raising about too direct and sometimes too aggressive and things like that, because of the high energy comes through, so you have to tone that down.
But particularly
in a bureaucratic organisation.
Yeah. But the energy brings value to try and push things through.
Yes.
You don't need to be another bureaucratic organisation.
Yeah. And often organisations will do that. They will bring people in because they know they need it.
Yeah.
But the struggle is you are, you know, maybe you're one of many, but you could be one person against a whole culture. And that's exhausting. But as long as, you know, there is enough coming back and enough change, then it's okay. But I think it was one of the articles I set you to read, you know, sort of said, if your own values, this is kind of going a little bit off skew to what you're saying, but if your own values are misaligned with company values, you know, you're not going to be there long term.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's true, because the passion, the energy, whether it comes out very overtly or, you know, in an introvert way, is what leads to engagement, which is kind of where we're going with this as well. Okay. Right, let's crack on then. For those of you who have started reflecting about your leadership and here for yourself, I would encourage you to keep it going. It's not a one-off exercise. Certainly when I started looking heavily into brand about 4 or 5 years ago and starting to teach at corporate programs, you know, mine has evolved and changed and then adapted over time. There's certain things that are just me, and there are other things that I'm really working on that I want to get better at. So that's why I say, you know, there's always something developmental about it. And it's, you know, it is something that you really reflect on and get feedback on. I did it again kind of 4 years on recently, and I got some of my associates that I work with and my husband to write down, you know, the top 10 adjectives that would describe me. And then I sat down and went through them and said, what is it I do that give you those adjectives? Because, of course, it's their interpretation of those adjectives. That's the important piece. And again, I learned quite a lot, and it had changed. So I think it does evolve. It's not, here's my brand, and it stays forever. You know, I think we evolve, you know, we tweak it. So I would encourage you to just keep it going and get feedback on a regular basis from people who count and who know you well. Okay, let's move on then. So, I'm going to go in through the emotional intelligence, we're going to build that into leadership behaviour, leadership styles, and we're going to look at how that leads to basically getting the most out of your people, which is ultimately why we want to do leadership. And if we get the most out of our people and lead high engagement, guess what, it leads to better business results. So that's kind of the model that we're following. We know that we have an IQ, an intelligence quotient. And most people would argue, and I think would agree, that this pretty much stays stable through our life. It's not something that you can go away and develop and get better at. You know, you've got a certain intelligence. This is cognitive intelligence. What most of the research, it's about the 1990s, has looked at is what is the difference, therefore, if we know that IQ is set and we're looking at performance, if IQ, if different levels of performance, isn't, there's no correlation between that and IQ, what is the difference that makes the difference? And a lot of researchers, particularly the Hay Group, which is aligned to, not that I'm pushing them at all, which is aligned to Daniel Goleman, who's written extensively and made EQ popular, have researched, is ended up resulting in saying EQ, or emotional quotient, or IQ, you'll hear, not EQ, EQ or EI, emotional intelligence, is what makes the difference. And typically what they've done is go into an organisation and take, you know, your top performers and your bottom performers, or just take your top, I don't know, 25% and say what makes someone in your top 1% and, you know, the bottom of your top 25%, what's the difference? And inevitably it has come back as, you know, emotion intelligence is what has led to the higher performance. And they've measured that in, you know, many ways, but the easiest way to measure it is through output, whether it be sales revenue or trades or number of policies sold, whatever it is. So that's why it has become so popular, is because there is a very clear business case to it. Behind EQ is a competency model, which is why we've also looked at competencies, and I think it's important to understand what makes it up, because that's how we measure it. The good news is you can develop your EQ, or your EI, whatever you want to call it, emotional intelligence, over time. I'm a great believer that anyway, as we grow up, if we have a modicum of self-awareness and social awareness, we grow anyway, and at work we learn that, well, if you do this certain thing with this person, you're going to get more out of them, and with this person, if I do this and I'm slightly different, I mean, that's just, you know, at a very high level, a good degree of emotional intelligence. However, if you focus on it, you can make your emotional intelligence grow, you know, quicker, if you like. So what is it exactly? Four areas to it. One, we started talking about it last week, understanding yourself, understanding your emotions, your values, understanding others, the social competence, all the slides are on Moodle, so I'm not going to read through them. It accounts for, well, what percentage of job performance at the higher sort of echelons of management, what percentage, what EQ accounts for, what percentage of job performance of supervisors through to CEO? If we take their performance, EQ accounts for what percentage of their performance? Because there are other things like, have I got the right resources? Is my manager helping me? Have I got...
40%?
Yeah, it's about 50 to 70. That's quite high. And what percentage of top performers, if you take top performers across your organisation, let's say the top 10%, what percentage of them score high in EQ?
8.
8?
Almost
80%.
Sorry,
80%. 80%, yeah, I was you're upside down.
Yeah.
It's actually...
I have a low IQ.
But a great sense of humour. Yeah, 90%.
What do they class as... what do they class as high?
A high performer...
what do they class as a high score? Because I know, we just if you did the test, there's like a range, isn't there, is it? Above 80, above 90?
Oh, I see. Score high. What percentage score high? That's a good question. I don't know.
And there you find high.
Yeah, I don't know. Usually I would say above 80%. If you look at most of the 360 questionnaires, anything above 80 is a strength to capital.
Okay.
Yeah, it's a good question. I don't know specifically. And if we took our bottom performers, what... I don't know. what percent of low performers, let's call it, not performance, score high in EQ? So if we take our bottom performers, what percentage of them? Sorry? Yeah, it's about 10. Or is it? No, I think it's about 10%. So there's a small number of people at the bottom, about 10%. They have got high EQ, but for whatever reason, you know, they're not performing. And it could be they're in the wrong role, etc. So, there are four elements, and behind each of these are our competencies. I don't know if you probably haven't had time to print it off, but it's on Moodle, and I've brought some copies here, so I'll hang them out in the next door to do some work on it. We talked about self-awareness last week, so I'm not going to go through that again. Emotional awareness, accurate self-assessment, self-confidence. And then we've got self-management, which is, do I manage my emotions? The whole amygdala hijack piece. Did we talk about amygdala hijack last week? Yeah, so the primitive part of the brain, the amygdala, which is a storehouse for all your emotions. And what happens is when we're put under a situation where we are taken back to almost primitive time, which is either flight, fight, or freeze, we act purely on emotion. At an extreme, we call that phobia. So if you have a phobic response to something, there's no thinking involved. There's like a short circuit to a physiological reaction with no thinking involved. Now, that worked very well in primitive time, but obviously if we've progressed and we've developed a thinking brain, it gives us choice. And that's what this is all about. So at work, if we acted purely on instinct, it would be quite a messy place. And we do see that at work, don't get me wrong. But most of the time, we want us to something happen. We may imagine, you know, we will feel something, and we will make a choice about how we want to react and adjust our behaviour appropriately. Okay, that's the bit that we develop over time. Trustworthy, conscientiousness. Do you do what you say you're going to do? That whole piece. We did talk about this last week, didn't we? Mm-hmm. And achievement drive. So if you know what you want, you've set your goals with this whole accurate self-assessment piece. Are we achieving them? Have we got a sense of drive? Okay. So that's the whole self, personal competence piece, which is just all about the more introspection, what am I doing, how am I doing it? And I can't remember what this one was. Ah, yeah, the true north.
The purpose of True North is to help walk you through a stage where you can become an empowered leader at any stage of your career, where you don't feel like you have to be a victim of the system, you have to follow the rules, but you can be empowered to step up and lead now. But to do that, you have to learn how to lead yourself. Frankly, it's not about competencies and skills. It's really about learning how to lead yourself so you can be an empowering leader to others. And that's why we talk about and offer a series of exercises to help people to be in touch with their emotional intelligence, to be aware who they are, what they want in life, what's important, so they can reframe who they are in the work world and how they can make a difference. So they can understand at a deep level how they can be true to their values. Everyone wants to be true, but what do you do when you face the pressure? Or your whole career may be on the line. What are your ethical boundaries? How do you bound that so you don't make that one big mistake?
So it's just really a plug for his book. But he talks and links it very clearly to that first part of emotional intelligence, which is self-awareness. Now, my other one is self-management. Remember, I talked to you about that last week as well. So this
as he walked through them, a local man chucked an egg at him almost at point-blank range. John Preston immediately swung round and landed a punch straight on his jaw. The man then wrestled the Deputy Prime Minister onto his back and held him down over a small wall as police and Labour Party officials tried to release him. Eventually they freed him, but Mr. Prescott's problems weren't over. Another protester then jostled him before Labour members and police managed to get a very shaken-looking Cabinet Minister into the safety of the doors. Lawyers think it very unlikely that Mr. Prescott could be charged.
If you watch this in slow motion, the aggression, the pure primitive reaction in Prescott is just extraordinary. I don't matter how many times I see this, it's still extraordinary. Anyway, so that's where clearly self-management goes horribly wrong. And you'll know it for you, because the reason The reason we need to understand our values and what we hold dear is because often they're the things that we're more likely to have an emotional reaction to. Or because something happened in the past. So something might happen and it's stored, the emotional part of it is stored in your amygdala. Something else happens which is completely unrelated, maybe someone completely different, but it reminds you back to a situation in the past. And you have the same emotional reaction. It brings back those memories on an emotional level. And you act, again, kind of on instinct. So that's why, you know, a lot of cognitive therapy and all these types of things take you back and help you work it through so that you, again, have more choice and you kind of put it to bed. If you leave it there and you don't deal with it, it's kind of in the bin and it's rattling and then, bang, it comes out at the wrong time. Which is why the whole self-reflection piece I'm a big advocate.
John Prescott. So, just the way I view that is, it's incredibly authentic and true to him. That so, if Tony Blair had been egged, I think his response would have been vastly different. And part of the reason why John Prescott is who he is because it pretty much, I think everyone would have expected him to react. I think people would have been confused if he didn't react in that way. His, you know, his persona is very much based around that. So, is it really, you know, was it really the wrong thing to do? He's just been egged. He's responded pretty much in line with his public persona of the type of person he is.
People liked him more for it.
Yeah, his approval ratings went up because of he was doing it, because he was authentic to the type of person, the type of leader that he is.
So then you've got to think about what's the lens that I'm looking it through. So on the one hand, you've got, which again we did talk about last week, and particularly with Andrew, wasn't it, about Tiger Woods. Mm. What lens are we looking it through? If we're looking it through a lens of he is a political figure that is meant to set a standard of behaviour, then we could look at it in the sense that I'm bringing it up here. Is he being true to his core, and he does make a big thing about his core working class values, which is, you could argue that, yes, he was being true to that, and we would expect nothing different. So, again, I think it depends which way
you're going. I think if you're having a debate with the guy and the guy said something wrong and you punched him, that also would be slightly, that would be wrong. I think you've been attacked. I think it's a natural, regardless of whatever, you know, regardless of how he's dipped, you find it's a natural reaction, which is why he's a group.
Yeah, and then we get into the whole piece about the boundaries. So, the other thing I was listening to, again, not to harp too much on about Margaret Thatcher, but they were talking about what's going to happen on Wednesday when, because people will protest, isn't there? No question in my mind. So they said, well, if anyone, somebody said on the news, you know, if anyone throws anything, they will whip them away and lock them up. And what went through my mind, well, when Princess Diana died, they all threw roses. Is that, do you know what I mean? So it's, again, it's interpretation of boundaries. And I suspect what will happen is whatever anyone does, people will overreact and whip them away. So it'll be, you know, again, I think it's contextual. But on that one, as a political figure, and I think the irony of it was he was coming out of a court case, or I think, I can't remember, which was about aggression, I can't remember. That would be ironic, I think it was, I could have made that up. Fine, so self-management. Empathy. There's a great program, it's one of my, I won't share the clip actually, because it's self-indulgent, but there's a, again, American program that's, it's a TV series called Lie to Me. Has anyone seen it? Tim Roth, and he runs a business, multi-million-pound business in the States, in the show, which is all about reading people. So micro expressions, body language, and they put the cultural element over it. And even though it's just a series, there's actually quite a lot in it that debriefs what they're reading in people's faces and how they do it. And that's what empathy is all about: is are you aware enough to actually notice what's going on from the person in front of you from their baseline behaviour. So you have to kind of know, you know, when they tell a lie and when they don't tell a lie, you need to know when they're telling the truth. So you need to ask questions where you can adjust from there.
I've always sort of thought empathy was being able to relate to someone's situation. So it's not necessarily picking up on signals from them, is it? If someone says, my mum's just died, being able to sort of feel what that might feel like, that would be being empathetic, would it not?
Correct.
But you wouldn't necessarily have the skills to know if they're telling the truth that their mum's just died or not. But you could still be describing
different degrees of empathy. there's different degrees of empathy. So I think part of it is being able to, well, if you look at it at the three different levels that we've got, this is at an individual level. Service orientation is at a client level. Do I really understand what my client's needs are? And organisational awareness is looking at it at an organisational level. So do I understand what's really going on? Who are the people with power? Who are the people with influence? Who are the up-and-coming? Who knows who? What's the network? Who's married to who? Who's sleeping with who? All that kind of stuff, which is being what I call politically savvy.
Sure, I get that. So, but on a one-on-one, if you're having a one-on-one chat with someone and you are particularly good at reading neurological responses, like if someone's lying or feeling nervous or whatever, that you describe that as empathetic as well?
I would describe it more than what I think you're saying. So what I think you're saying, let me play it back, so if that's what you're saying, is that if you say to me, your grandmother's died, I go, oh, I'm really sorry. I'm not, that for me isn't a true degree of empathy, because I don't know you, I don't know how you feel about it, I haven't asked you, you could be really happy.
Right.
So I think it's a little bit deeper, and I think that takes either asking questions or...
Okay. Yeah.
Reading you, because if you sat there with a massive smile on your face, I'd say, oh, are you really sorry? And you go, no, I'm happy. So I mean, and then I've misread
got
you. Yeah, exactly. I've misread you.
Yeah.
So I think it's taking it to a different level.
And not
making assumptions.
Yeah.
Because I think what we all tend to do, if we, you know, in one of the areas of development around social awareness, is the assumptions we make. And if we are not self-aware, we won't know in this level what assumptions we're making about people, by what they say, how they say it, and the way they react. Mm. So for me, empathy is a lot more about paying a hell of a lot more attention. Mm. What they say, how they say it, the tone of voice, their facial expressions, asking some neat questions, their body language, everything, for me. Mm. But then that's kind of what I do. So that's what I mean by empathy. Service orientation is doing it with clients, and then organisational is doing it at an organisational level. And then ultimately, the last bucket, which is relationship management, and this is where leadership sits. I think, as I said last week, you know, I don't think you can be good at this box unless you've got a good degree of the elements of the other three. Because I don't think you can build really good teams if you aren't thinking about your behaviour, your values, how your behaviour is impacting others, and noticing the impact that it has on others. That's the social awareness piece. So they're the four elements. To make it even more complicated, here's the competency model that sits behind it. This is the one put together by the EI Consortium. You will find different companies measure it differently. Sorry, I know why, it's because I'm going to do an exercise. Sorry, I won't hand them out to everyone because we're going to do an exercise. Keep that for a minute. That's why I didn't get a copy for everyone. It's on Middle Web, so as soon as you get out of here, it'll be there. So what I'd like to do is I'd like you to split into two groups. So maybe this group is 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, and 6 here. And how many copies are out? 1, you've got a copy anyway. 2, you've got a copy, so I'll give you those. There's 3 more copies. What I'd like this group to focus on is self-awareness and self-management. Have a look through this, have a discussion about it, and I would like you to come up with your sort of top 10 of how you would, maybe it's 5 and 5 or, you know, 5 and 5, ways of developing self-awareness and self-management. So what's your tactic? So for you guys, it's going to be social awareness and relationship management. So get together. I'll just give you about 10 or 15 minutes, and I want you to think about, and a lot of it is in your book, so the Emotional Intelligence book, what would be your top 10 tactics for increasing? If you had to develop your social awareness, what were your maybe top 4 or 5? And also relationship management, your top 4 or 5 activities that would help you develop in this particular area of emotional intelligence. Okay? So I'll give you about 15 minutes, and then I want to hear back from how you would develop them.
Yep.
2 groups.
I think there's probably 10 points in the...
Yeah, I think I've got it in here, actually.
Social aware. Well, I've got 12 so far. Oh, no, I've got 14, so do I win?
There you go. Have you guys gone through relationship management?
Have you read this?
No.
I haven't read this.
I haven't ever seen this before. We haven't been given it.
No. Explain your decisions. Yeah, you want to make them. Well, acknowledge the other person's meaning.
How much
time
are we here? 15
minutes. So, yes, about half past.
I haven't actually read this.
No, we haven't been given it.
No, sorry, my emotional intelligence questionnaire.
Oh, right, yeah.
I just looked at the front sheet and went, oh, my score is that. That's about as far as we got.
So, five strategies for both.
Ten for each, was it? I thought. But
yeah. Five or six for each. Five or six number, it doesn't have to be an exact number, just a few activities for each.
And we're doing social awareness.
Yeah, should we just think?
Yeah. You guys, yeah, go sit up there and do this.
So, you name too many times on the door.
I don't know your name, so I'm not
going to be. There you go,
I'm not going to ask
that. We'll drop it into sentences when it isn't.
Oh, it is.
Wow.
Because I always feel like I don't do enough.
You know,
if they get so Linda.
Yeah.
That's supposed to be like a really big.
Yeah, I thought, because you like to hear your own name.
Sorry, I just need to step back.
Yeah.
I didn't keep one from the side.
Yeah,
yeah. that was very well. When you do it for the sake of doing it, when it is appropriate.
So it's not authentic.
I've got a friend who does that.
I do it a lot when I'm meeting someone.
I do it
at times. Just because that's the way I remember his name.
I do it on purpose when I first.
Hi, Catherine. How are you?
How are you doing, Catherine?
Nice day. Yes, but do you know what I did sometimes when I writing and then I want to drop the attention, so I end up saying like so Arif.
Yeah,
I think that will.
Yeah, that gets
because it's like more personal.
Yeah.
And it's also a really good control methodology. Like with children, and in more experienced adults, the more I sort of feel that they are just like big children. Excuse me, but with children, it's really obvious if you use their names.
Yeah,
they're far more receptive, and they behave a lot better. But if you just go, can you do this? They're like,
yeah. They don't play generally.
Part of it is getting their attention.
Yeah.
By saying their name, they're like, oh, you're talking to me.
And they feel respected, I think, as well. A bit. Yeah, like.
As they say it.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
That's kind of
where you're like,
yeah. You don't like it, wow. I just had a thing today when I was thinking I should have used someone's name a bit because it would be more.
No, only if it's too much and if it's inappropriate.
I think you would be. Unusual.
I'm trying to think of an example and I can't really.
Does anyone else it all not like if someone used your name all the time in a second?
It depends
if
it
is. I have something to do with the culture. I'm seeing the light over here about money is on the people, say, in the Western world. Back in India, if you get somebody's name, you feel offended.
If you did what?
If you get somebody's name.
If you use it?
Yeah. You feel offended.
What?
Really?
Why are you not doing anything to speak?
What?
Yeah,
so in India, if you use their name, they're offended, or if you don't use their name.
No, if you use the name,
it's also
the
same.
Over here, my name is, I call him by name.
Oh, you mean you use
yeah,
the title instead?
You can say title instead. But
don't think somebody's
okay, just take the example of the Sunday. Over here, I'm just taking his name directly and. It should be no problem. One to one. Back there, if I just, my immediate boss, if I just did his first name.
So, how do you have to
call
so
Mr.
Sir?
Sir?
Or, or just.
But that, we have that here as well, though. We have that here where it can be too familiar. If you say you call your boss, but it's not so much name, this has got really casual, but say you went up to the president and said, what, Bob? It depends on the guy.
RMD would be absolutely horrified if you called him Sir or Mr. Machin, but he's actually.
Yeah.
Everyone calls him Ash,
yeah.
And that's it.
Yeah.
No, but I wouldn't. The CEO of Microsoft, I wouldn't say hi, Charles. I would say. I would,
no, but you wouldn't walk straight.
But I wouldn't say Mr. as well. I would say
yeah.
Hi, because I wouldn't know how would it be appropriate.
So without knowing how he would want to be addressed,
Mr. would be stupid.
Yeah, Mr. wouldn't be
would
used
be here.
But you wouldn't use the
but
name.
I wouldn't say
no.
Higher
you
rank.
Unless you
were
invited to.
Because everyone knows
I say,
higher
excuse me.
You'd never go to say, very senior in your company, unless it was a very informal company, or you're already senior enough that you kind of know them. If you walked into a company and you're a number levels down, or you've never met the guy and he's quite senior, you wouldn't typically call him by his first name, even though that might be one.
Well, I don't
But Britain was like that, I'd say 20 years ago.
I forget about the Britain, even in the US. I mean, the guy who is heading our office is a US national.
Right.
But we have, it's like a multinational.
Yeah.
Many nationalities.
I think that's a great thing.
But then when I'm trying to compare my last company that I was working with longer, and then I try to visualize the things over here, it has a difference.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
It's like very easy working over there, easy flow there. That aspect is just by, you know, just by taking his name, he's getting offended.
Mm.
So it's like when I just mentioned this, I realize you simply like, oh. So it's like a bunch of shock.
I mean, there's a lot of culture, but it's not just the national culture.
So there's not a problem with self-awareness.
You're talking about.
Because you know exactly how you want to do it. It's just how you then manifest.
You've got a small informal company culture.
But also, I reckon in Britain 20 years ago, what you're explaining would have been fairly typical. Even
yeah.
when I was at school, I remember you used to people used to say Mr. McNaik.
Yeah. Well, at school.
At school, absolutely.
I'm still allowed.
Yeah, yeah.
If
yeah.
I went back to school now, I'm not allowed to call my teacher.
Yeah, when I see
no,
my
no,
teachers
no.
from school.
No, no, sorry. I mean, as a child, I would be called Miss. People were called Mr. Renaika and Mrs. Renaika, and that was far more the culture 20 years ago in Britain.
Okay.
Not how teachers and children related to it. So I just meant when I was at school about 20 years ago. but in Sri Lanka, when I go to Sri Lanka, it's like some of the cultural traits aren't. From Sri Lanka, would be then more like British traits, but from 20 years
but
ago.
The culture in Sri Lanka is not very different from the culture in
India. Right, I don't know India, of course, I shouldn't, but that's why I was kind of wondering if it is, because it sort of seems, I think India in a few years, probably not 20, will probably be more informed of perceiving
it
right.
But not at this moment,
wow. No, yeah.
That's a different thing.
Oh, yeah.
So, the first one, the 17 social awareness strategies.
Greet people by name and watch body language. If we did those two, we'd be sorted because we realise you freeze up when we use your name. And we go,
and
oh, we should be doing
so,
that. She's not liking
that.
I'm one of the easiest people to read as well. And I just glaze over. And roll my eyes a lot. So
I think you've got to know the person, right? Because some people are quite agitated, quite animated and move along.
Yeah.
Some people are like really slow. It doesn't mean they're not interested.
Yeah, but you have to then, if you don't develop.
I think that's what...
But
you
we've got
to
look at the top. What are the top six out of these? Whether or not they'd be universally as useful. Practice the art of listening to people. I reckon step into their shoes, I think.
See, that's what I thought empathy was. See,
I'm thinking, he's smiling, why is he smiling? I said, what does that mean? Are you okay? Yeah. And you go, well, actually, mate, I'm backed by a fund. Wow, really? So I got, I thought what she said made sense. Because just get into the shoes, you've got to kind of suss out where the shoes are.
Yeah, I guess so. Part of it is when you're in, when you're getting conflict around an idea or you're in a meeting, to try and put yourself in their shoes. You can really get frustrated.
But you're
really
doesn't help you.
But that doesn't help you, you know, you're frustrated. You need to try and think about their point of view, where, what their division goals are. That's what I thought. Trying to see things from their point of view. But it's kind of linked.
Yeah,
I guess it's kind of linked.
I thought the grandfather thing, that makes sense to me, because I would have had to really adjust in all those circumstances.
Yeah, okay, fine.
That's why when I asked the question, I was like, trying to do this, and I was just asking yourself.
But I definitely think it's a good one.
Step into their shoes, yeah, ten. Seek the whole picture.
Catch the mood of the room.
Make sure you communicate that.
But is that, is catch the mood of the room not similar to other ones,
go people watching,
people watching body language, timing, everything.
Yeah.
It's kind of all about one, really, isn't it?
I
think
it's
just maybe
what?
Charlie.
No, but I think body language is different to mood of the room.
But the mood of the room will probably be reflected by the body language of people. If you're at talk, sometimes
they're like,
everyone's like that.
Yeah.
Then
it is body. How else do you get the mood of the room?
No, I'm saying, like, so for me, this is a one-on-one.
I just went, yeah.
For me, this is a one. I see this more as a one-on-one, and this is a one-to-many.
Yeah, but it's the, if you,
it's similar sorts.
You could say, when you're in a lecture, in how they do the speaking stuff, the
advanced presentation.
Yeah, they say what people do.
Yeah.
And if
it's a great, it's a great
right.
Yeah.
We're gonna have a break stuff in 5 minutes,
yeah,
and then we.
Yeah.
And then you carry on for 10 minutes. I think that's part of the strategy. You can tell that the end is coming, so they perk up and they just carry on. Maybe.
I think listening. I think stepping into their shoes. I think timing's probably quite key as well.
I don't quite get that one.
I don't get that one either. What is that? You looked it up.
It's obvious. Basically, when dealing with people in their emotions, it's gauging a time to either ask a question or talk about something. It would be like if you're talking about your grandma just died, and I say, oh, you'll never guess what happened. Like, you know,
you have to close the issue and then continue with.
Says,
and again, if you're telling a story
and
someone butts in and starts with something, get you off on a tangent, then you're like, well, clearly it wasn't remotely concerning what I was saying.
Anyway.
Exactly. So it's just I guess it's appropriateness of conversation.
Yeah.
So I would say that's quite high.
Yeah, no, I agree.
Okay, we've
I
got
totally
four
didn't
or five
make, understand what that meant though, would it? Just
no,
you
didn't
make time yet.
No.
So we've got 4 or 5 there. Move on.
Yeah.
So what were our four?
Now,
five? We like the name, we like body language, we like make time and everything. We like step in the shoes.
Listening is the other one.
Yeah. That's fine. One more?
I think that's 5. It's not that really massive, 5 or 6, but.
What's
developed a back pocket question?
Well, that's having something for when you're dealing with awkward silences, but that's bullshit. Because there's nothing more kind of stifling than someone clearly bringing out their back pocket questions because they can't think of anything else to say.
Is that what that means?
Well, I assume so.
I would have thought that's having something pertinent to ask and something else. I would often do that in a meeting when I'm
first
to the one-to-one.
Doing a bit of research.
Like, how's
And so how's your...
Yes, yeah, so where should you come to London and like, stuff like that? Like, stupid
back pocket questions are used just in case to bail you out of any awkward silence or uncomfortable moments. Social awareness structure advice, we do that so you get to know someone better.
So you fired, and they're
sorry.
I'm not sure that really works.
No, but it does work in social
stuff,
doesn't it?
Yes, I have 5 kids.
Yeah.
Even
if working,
I don't know him.
But I think that's like, I often have that situation when you meet someone and you chat and then you're thinking, oh. And knowing, I think a feedback pocket questions is good. Like, how's the weather been for you today? Or where do you work? Or where do you live?
Yeah,
break
the ice.
Again, it's me being the way I am,
but
I just don't
I'd rather not talk.
I'd rather have cake. I can't join him. I can't even put it in my head.
Yeah, how dare they talk to me? How dare they engage with me? To all people. I think you should be that person sat on the shelf.
But if I'm talking to someone and there's lots of awkward silences, then I'd rather not be talking to them. So I'm just going to talk to someone else rather than
so nice to meet you, I'm off.
So they might just be having the one bad day of their life. Yeah. And you missed out this awesome test.
Yeah, maybe.
Or not.
Perhaps I should change my opinion. Or go and live in a cave.
Oh, we need to get...
The
we probably need to get
okay. The relationship management stuff.
Yeah, we've got 17 there.
Do you use
humour
to...
Oh, sorry.
Yeah.
Do you use humour to...
Yeah, that's a good one.
Sometimes, but humour to your point of call, so you don't want to talk about it.
Only get
mad on
purpose.
That's interesting. Yeah, that is cool.
I
like that.
Do that naturally.
You're always
bad
on purpose.
No, that's quite cool.
No,
like, you're showing
me. When you can.
Show it. Explain.
It's
quite adamant, I think.
No, it's just special.
You just leave me on most of the questions.
So, compliment. Yeah, you are very nicely sad today. Very good to see you sad today.
Good demonstration of psychosis.
The way you butchered that person. Clinical, I clean it.
Oh, yeah. Oh, like, yeah.
That's quite nice.
What the fuck?
Yeah.
Shut up, man. Thank you.
How are you doing? Have you got some activities?
Yeah.
Yes. How are you doing?
Halfway through.
A couple more minutes.
I think it's an employer. About someone else, right?
Yeah. I quite like the tackle a tough conversation, but I'm not quite sure what it means. But I like the tough conversation.
I think.
Don't get mad. I like that because I think they're saying don't let things get you mad. But if you really have it, if you really want to show something like that,
I think it's you get angry about being angry when you're not really.
I
think it's
only be angry about the stuff.
About the stuff that you really.
Oh, check that one there. Yeah, really
anyone can
I'm
be angry. That's to be angry with the right person, the right degree, the right time. You naturally avoid situations
where that for me doesn't feel like it's.
Anger is an emotion that exists for a reason. No, it's being genuinely angry. It's not.
It's not.
It's not going. I really don't like waistcoats.
Waistcoats are cool.
Yeah, I've got no issue with waistcoats whatsoever. But yeah, but that would be fake anger, you see. But I don't think that.
I thought it was the whole point about managing EQ was about managing your emotions and not letting you. It's like, for example, don't get to the John Prescott point where you're punching someone in the face.
I think it's fine if they
just. Yeah, I do. Oh.
Expressing anger in appropriate ways communicates your strong feelings and reminds people of the gravity of the situation. Expressing anger too much or at the wrong place will sensitize people to what you're feeling. So yeah, so if like you've always got the everyone's got that angry boss is always angry about everything. So then you kind of it's like the
prioritize your anger.
Yeah, it's not going to be. Yeah, it's not going to be happy with anything I do. So what's the point? Whereas.
Yeah, when you're angry, exactly, you're angry all the time, then people would underestimate you.
He's always angry, he's always angry, whatever, it doesn't really matter. Whereas, if you...
I know, I get it now, but I'm not sure about that one.
I think it's to show anger, but not as a tendency to shove it down. It can motivate people as well, like if you're in the police and someone, a little child has been killed, you got angry every time the stapler went missing, but I don't think it's the work I do, but I don't feel that
there would be a situation where it would be valid for me to show anger. Okay. Other than like 50% of the workforce has just got cut. Okay, by that.
Yeah. But injustice, though. If someone's been very unjust in the way they treated a team you were responsible for, would that not be
But you see, we can relate to this because you don't get.
I'm not an angry person. Maybe just take me out of this.
So when it does, it must be really impressive.
Actually, you're probably quite a good demonstration. Yeah, maybe if you were to be angry, then.
Some people say that they find me good at emotions because I don't care and I don't have these swings and emotions.
But you do feel like, oh, just want to show it.
Sometimes.
Yeah, I know.
I don't know, you see me in lectures there when people ask you questions.
Well, exactly. Jota!
Yeah.
He's very authentic, though.
Yeah. I think that's quite a good one, I quite like that.
Yeah, I don't think it's one of the top six that I would say.
Yeah. What are we saying, top six then?
I thought opening curious was right.
Absolutely.
Trust.
That's brilliant. It's just almost a no brainer, that one.
But no brainers often need to be said.
Yeah, maybe.
Keep dressed in. Be careful.
When you care, I do.
It's almost the same as the showing anger.
Yeah, but I kind of thought, if you don't care, then you don't care. So I kind of thought that's a bit of a funny one, because caring, if you care about something, typically it's hard not to show.
I think some people are too dispassionate in business, but maybe.
But it says if you care, when you care. And do you think people have photo shows?
Yeah, I think they are.
I think from a business relationship management, it's things like if you've done...
Okay, let's draw the line there, otherwise just before we break, let's hear back from the two groups. Self-awareness and self-management. That was you guys, wasn't it?
Yes.
Good. So, tell me, if I was developing either of those, what would be some of the activities you would advise?
We're talking about if it was a trigger for your behaviour, a trigger for your emotions to just take time to reflect on why that situation.
Right, so the activity would be stop, sit, reflect, understand what's the why behind that reaction. Perfect.
We elaborated saying like whether it's a person or a situation for good or for bad.
Yeah.
You know, reflecting outside of that, kind of in your own time, in a kind of a candle or something like that, kind of why you do those things, and then become more aware of that, you know, over time as you create a habit of.
When does it come up? What comes up? Is there a trigger? Is it always with the same person? Is it different situations? Yeah. A really good way, I've worked with a couple of people particularly that spring to mind that had, I call it anger issues, it wasn't, but it was like overreaction to certain situations. And one of the ways they found it, what they found helpful, was actually just journaling. So at the end of each day, just reflecting back on the day and doing that over a period of time to start seeing the trends and saying, well, what did I feel through the day, what was going on, and just raising their awareness through that. So yeah, similar sort of thing. Okay, so that's one. What else?
Feedback on a specific situation. You know, people that where you can trust them to give you constructive feedback.
Lovely.
It could be written or verbal or your reaction.
Yeah.
Can we say that's slightly better than saying or asking, you know, how am I as a manager? It's better to contextualise it given a specific situation.
Particularly if you're asking for feedback from people who work for you. Yeah. Good?
On self-regulation, and Gail and Beth had a genius idea that maybe everyone else already does, but if you really are getting to the stage where you're annoyed and you really want to send that email, send it, but send it to yourself, which I think is just absolutely genius and probably would have saved my career at various points in it.
Yes.
So I would definitely be using that.
Definitely. Yeah. Never, never, never do reply, write it, even if you've no intention to send it, because sod's law, you press the button by mistake. Anything that gives you a time to think under self-management, whether it's writing the email, sending it to yourself, walking around the block, going for a cigarette, like, condone cigarette smoking, but going for a cigarette or going for a walk, Whatever it is, phone a friend, whatever it is, create time to allow the emotions to dissipate.
Just knowing your physical reactions, just being aware of, like, listing them and going back and looking, you know, what kind of reactions do I have when I'm sweaty and red, or, you know,
exactly.
And when you can feel them, try and, you know, get yourself out of the situation.
Because every emotion is actually preceded minutely by a physiological reaction. So you will feel it somewhere in your body, or through temperature, or through the clenching of your hands. Something will happen. The more you're aware of what's going on with your body, the more likely it is that you will, over time, give yourself choice. Part of the choice is thinking, what would I do different next time? You need to learn alternatives. Otherwise, you'll always do what you've always done, and you'll always get what you've always got, as the adage goes. But if you start thinking, this is what I could do, it may not happen first time, second time, third time, but over time, you'll give yourself that choice. So, lovely tactics. Any others?
Sometimes just sleeping, again, that's just giving yourself time. But sleeping on things gives you different perspective in the morning.
Definitely. The subconscious mind does sort out a lot of stuff that we tend to crowd with our conscious mind and our emotion. Good.
Look for the cues and other people's reactions.
Yeah, that's more social awareness, but yeah. Yeah, it you can see it's sort of very intimate, but yeah, you learn about yourself by being, you know, you combining the two. I can learn more about myself and what's going on by noticing the impact I have on others. Good, some good activities there. And again, there are heaps in the book. There are some that will come out specific for you for your report. And then just, you know, being conscious of what goes behind, you know, each of the competencies. This isn't one that, you know, is necessarily mapped identically, but they're pretty much the same. Social awareness and relationship management. So everyone gets that.
Well, we took a different approach. We've just looked in the book and ranked the ones that we thought were best. I think for social awareness, there were 17. And the top five that we picked out were greet people by name, watch body language, make timing everything, which we weren't quite sure what that meant. So when you read through it, it's about appropriate use of white space, or when to jump over someone or when not to jump over them, when to change tempo, when to change subject. That was broadly it, wasn't
it? If someone's having a personal crisis, not say someone comes in and goes, my grandmother just died, and you go, anyway, the strategy we're going to drive forward, and the person's in bits, say, oh, they're really excited because they got their big inheritance, whichever, you know, being attuned to where people are at before you're trying to push something through, whether it be a small or a big thing. Yeah.
And then the last two were practice the art of listening and step into their shoes. I mean, I think I kind of push back on some of these because they sound so obvious. We're talking about some of the obvious ones are actually some of the most powerful ones.
Well, I can tell you that something like listen may be obvious, but I don't know many people who do it really well. Really don't. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, they are. I think a lot of this is obvious,
yeah.
But we get busy, don't we?
Yeah.
And it's the obvious stuff that we forget.
And I think a lot of the ones that we kind of picked out there were about reading. You know, one of them was actually to catch the mood of the room, but a lot of it is about appreciating what's going on with people when you're talking to them, or when you're doing whatever you're doing, whether it's one-on-one or to a group.
Yeah. Really nosy, curious.
Yeah, absolutely. Inquisitive. Body language, listening, timing, all of that to me is kind of is general, just interactions and being able to kind of read how it's going.
Yeah. Some of this you need a baseline for, because I'm quite a cross-the-arm person, but that doesn't mean I'm defensive, it's just I find myself quite comfortable like this. But until you know me, I think it's quite hard. You'll go, oh, he's standoffish, he's a bit defensive.
Would you describe, if you had to describe yourself more as outgoing or shy, which one would you choose?
Me? I'm definitely more outgoing.
If you were describe yourself between somebody who would tell everybody about you or be more reserved, what would you say?
I did this one actually recently. I'm probably in the middle, and I think it's contextual there for me. Yeah. At work, probably less so. But in social situations, probably more so. So I think, I mean, that's not quite being authentic with the walls in the room, but broadly speaking, I'd say I'm in the middle.
Yeah. because this doesn't mean necessarily defensive. This can be. I'm not quite comfortable yet.
And part of it is because I don't have armrests. I think if I have armrests, I definitely use. I've got nowhere to put my arms.
But there's a reason, and again, there's a reason. And the more people get to know you, the more there will be a reason why you do this.
Possibly. Yeah.
But I think I would say that if you know that this shows that you are, I don't know, protecting yourself or whatever, just don't try not to do it. I don't think that's not being authentic. If you
correct, I agree with that.
Yeah, I think that's.
I think that's being savvy. That if actually Julia says something and I suddenly find like this probably is that you disagree with what I said, or you don't understand it, or you don't agree, it probably does mean that. But if you catch yourself doing it, there's two things. You either think, oh, well, look, she's got a point, maybe I should listen to it, or actually it's you're going to say something, and you'll probably find as you say it, your arms are uncrossed. Not picking on you and crushing your arms, but I punch. Lovely.
I need some of my arms, that's what it is.
I know, luckily I can't push my arms anymore. But I think that is being socially aware, is being aware of the impact that your physicality might have on someone else. That's a good point. What did you get from relationship management then?
We thought, be open and be curious.
So what's the activity? What would you be doing to develop it?
Questioning.
Questioning, yeah, I think ask.
Try and, yeah.
Definitely. You can't really do that last box. And part of social awareness is asking the questions, so you're not making assumptions. You know, what's really going on, what do you really need, you know, etc. So, yeah, asking questions is a great activity. What else?
Avoid giving mixed signals, like crossing your arms, we thought. Really cool.
I know, it's really bad.
Avoid giving this, yeah, because, that's sort of. And build, everyone loves build trust.
So again?
Build trust again seems obvious that trust is important.
So, what
but
do we do?
Building
what's the
trust.
Activity? What would you be practicing?
Do what you say you will do.
Right, I think it's that reliability piece. Remember the Meister equation. If you say you're going to do it, you can't do it well.
And it's always under commit, over deliver, I think, is a key part of that. Don't try and. And we thought, explain.
Oh, yeah.
I didn't like that one. I haven't even circled it. I don't agree. they all really like
when
you
care,
show
it.
But I kind of thought, people who care kind of do show it. But they said, oh, but if your boss thinks you've done really well, it's nice if he says so. Well, I think if he thinks you've done well, he usually possibly would say so. But it's, I think it's an authentic thing. What's that?
I think it's not so much
in our company, you don't give an email back that you're doing well.
Oh, okay. But does that mean that they haven't noticed because your company doesn't notice good behaviour, they only notice bad behaviour? In which case they don't care about good behaviour in a sense. Do you sort of... So I kind of thought if you care, if you actually are bothered to care, then you tend to show it. Whereas if you... Like I've had bosses who, like that, they won't feedback if you're doing all right. They'll only feedback if you do something wrong. But that's because if you're doing all right, they don't really care because you haven't kind of come up onto their radar.
But it comes down to that relationship... kind of management relationship building, in that it's not about necessarily doing your job well, it's just about it being a reciprocal relationship rather than everything just being one way. So it's, I don't know, I guess maybe them saying you've done a good job isn't a great example, but it's kind of getting something back from the other person which shows that they are bothered or aren't bothered or do care or don't care. It's about kind of expressing that, I guess, to each other.
But also, do you think that sometimes we don't give enough feedback to people saying, actually, I quite appreciate you giving me some feedback on how you think I am doing, as opposed to...
That's kind of the reverse. Like, if you care about feedback, show that you care and say, I want some.
Yeah.
There's a couple of things that come out. One is the word you use, so care, right? That's obviously a value. I think you feel quite passionate about that because you've talked about it. You know, you seem even confused that, well, why wouldn't someone?
I just thought the way it was worded was a bit funny. I thought.
No, I think that's fair, but it tells us a bit about you.
Yeah, I think care is
important. And why you like to work for you. But one thing I can tell you about human behaviour is people do need what they call, you know, positive strokes. We do need to know we exist.
Mm.
Yeah.
And whether it is a, you know, great job, whether it's a passing comment, you know, we all need it.
Yeah.
And over time, you'll see that people who need a lot of it, their performance dips sooner than those who don't need it or get used to it or make an excuse, well, it's not our culture. But over time, they will seek it elsewhere.
Should it not be written, whether you care or not, praise people?
I will pass it back to the...
I think it depends on the person. So I'm thinking of people who work for me. There's some who do need that constant reinforcement that they're doing a fantastic job, even though they are utterly amazing. And there's others who really do not want to hear it every day because they almost find it embarrassing.
That's
yeah.
fantastic.
Yeah.
And let me know if things are going tits up and...
But they probably will want to know that they're either going to get the promotion or the bonus or the next exciting project.
Don't
tell them
negative things because that would be quite fun, but not that much fun.
Exactly. So again, it depends. It does depend. But people do need positive
There was one of those things, one of your articles said about some people want to hear words, some people like to have a ward on the wall, and some people, everyone seems to have a way of receiving. Pat on the back, but it's not necessarily a pat on the back.
Correct.
So
and
that
going
might
it right is being socially aware.
Right.
Understanding the person that you're managing to do great leadership, then you choose the appropriate recognition. Some people love the whole in front of everyone. Other people would die if you did that.
Mm.
So that's where they come together. All of this comes together. Mm. Right, break. Can we be back about 8:05? Yep. Well done.
Is this the iPhone 4?
Yes.
Even though they might give me very different stories and personal experiences of that individual, 8 out of 10 times, my experiences, there is usually one thing. So if you can work it out for yourself, great. And that's why I say, just think, what's the one thing that actually will have the biggest impact? And do that for, whether it's this year or the next 6 months. And then you might do one thing next year. But you're more likely to, A, make the change and make it sustainable by picking one or two, rather than, and they're development things. So I always think, build on your strengths. So, most organisations will say, oh, you need 3 or 4 development items, things in your PDP. And my view would be, 2 or 3 of them should be your strengths anyway, which is kind of easier, but you need to focus on them. The more you focus on them, the more likely you are to get better at them. And then 1 or 2 would be something that you're developing where maybe you're not as good as you would like to be. It doesn't mean to say you're going to be perfect at it. It doesn't matter. So for me, I used to work in investment banking. I knew, because I moved out of banking into HR, I would never be brilliant at statistical analysis or understanding products. Anything like that. I wasn't interested, it wasn't my passion, it wasn't my forte. I was good at numbers, but I just wasn't passionate about it. Which meant when I moved into HR, I consistently got feedback around, you need to, increase your product knowledge, you need to, increase your business knowledge. Which meant I made sure I kept it to an acceptable level, that I could talk to my clients, so they didn't see me just as fluffy HR, they saw me as a competent business partner. But I would never go out of my way to really understand how an option works. Because I didn't need to, because I wanted to be excellent as a leadership, somebody working in leadership development. Does that make sense?
Mm.
So sometimes you've got a development that you've got to bring up to an acceptable level, but a lot of research would say work out what you're really good at and then work on that. But anyway, this is about change, behavioural change is the first thing. The second is where we bring together the whole model, which I'll do, and then I'll get you to just very quickly do an exercise on this stuff. And then I want to move on to leadership styles and engagement. So, if we follow my thinking and my proposal, the reason we care about leadership in most organisations is because of the bottom line. We want to create a sustainable, successful, organisation. There are lots of other things in addition to money, but typically we measure it through shareholder value or employee value or whatever it is. Okay? Then we have to think, what's the biggest impact on this, which is our X. So what do you think the biggest impact on an organisation's performance is? The biggest impact on how well an organisation does or not? The people. Okay? And by the people, it is how engaged they are. So it used to be how motivated they are. The buzzword these days is engaged. What do we mean by engaged, and how is that different to motivation?
Mm.
how do we measure it? How do organisations these days measure engagement?
We have an engagement survey.
Exactly, we do. It's as simple as that. Typically, it's an engagement survey. Gallup do it through the Q12. We come across the Q12. So just, I don't think I've got a slide on it. Google Q12 Gallup. And what Gallup did, and this is where the research by Marcus Buckingham, remember I talked about him last week, comes in. What he did was go out and measure this part in particular between engagement and the bottom line. And he was able to, having him, it was the Gallup organisation, I shouldn't credit it just to Marcus Buckingham. What Gallup did was they went out and interviewed, I don't know, 23,000 employees across X number of organisations to find out what led to high performance. And their hypothesis is that they could boil it down to 12 questions. That if the employees, on let's say a 5-point scale, predominantly answered, strongly agree to these 12 questions, it would lead to high engagement. High engagement means, I love my job, I come in, I'm full of energy, and I'm going over and above on a day-to-day basis. Of those 12 questions, one of them was, which is where the strengths movement and Marcus Buckingham comes in, I play to my strengths every day. You know, I'm in a role that plays to my strengths every day. Others were, again, look them up, I should have put a slide up, I may have a slide up, who knows. Others were things like, I receive regular feedback from my manager, I feel that I have been developed or invested in over the last 6 months, I work with colleagues, it's not exact wording, but I work with colleagues who are equally committed as me, and you'll recognise, if you look at any engagement survey in any organisation, you can map it to Q12.
Okay.
So that's really how we measure, typically, how we measure engagement. Okay. So, happy people is what drives business performance. What percentage do you think of happy people, the impact on that, of being happy people, what percentage? Because obviously there are other things that impact the bottom line. So if we're building this hypothesis that the bottom line or the success of an organisation is impacted by how engaged people are, it's not linear, i.e. this, you know, if this goes up, this will go up, but a large proportion of this is made up of how engaged people are. What proportion do you think?
20%?
Yeah, it's about 60. I'll look up the exact statistics. It's roughly about 60% of your bottom line is impacted by how engaged people are. And you can look at those Q12.
Do you think... saying happy people perhaps has thrown me a bit, but I kind of...
Yes, that might be too
flippant a phrase. Well, just on the basis I went through the whole MBA asking everyone I could meet, so what do you do? And they go, okay. So do you enjoy it? And they go, well, it involves this, or it pays the bills, or people generally don't say yes. And the people I found who said yes were people in the army and stuff like that. They were like, yeah, love it, it's really interesting, whatever. But so I just wonder how many happy people there are. And there's lots of successful organisations, and I'm not sure that everyone in them is happy on research.
Yeah, I think engaged and happy are different, aren't they?
My happy comment probably did.
Yeah, for us, I lead that in our organisation. We don't measure happiness. It's no value to us.
Yeah.
That sounds terrible.
Or enjoying their job, even. Enjoying their job, I think, has got value. I think I buy that people who enjoy their job will work harder, be more involved, but from what I could make out from my limited research, is that most people don't vocally enjoy their job. But they're still working for organisations. They still probably do quite a good job. Like my boss at the time, awesome boss, did a very good job, didn't he? Enjoy what he did. Like playing golf, but he could work very effectively.
I don't know how you can work.
So there's two ways to look at this.
Right.
We're not measuring happiness. We'll look at happiness when we look at the resilience on the final week. So here's the 12. This is how we measure engagement, and I think my happy is not the right thing.
Right.
Happiness is something out there.
Right.
Okay, we'll come back to happiness.
Yeah.
But
enjoy. But, happiness may not be what I'm saying. I'm saying enjoy what you do, actually.
Right. So here it takes it to a more robust way of thinking about that. So, if you could answer, I strongly agree, 5-point scale, strongly disagree to strongly agree, to these 12 questions, you are more likely to be giving your all at work. That's the way I want you to think about it. So do I know what's expected of me at work? Okay, so the more you are like, yeah, I really know what's expected, the more likely it is that everything you do on a day-to-day basis, minute-to-minute, is adding to, you know, the success of the organisation. Do you have the resources to do your job? So often you hear people say, oh, I don't go for the whole, I haven't got the right staff, I haven't got enough staff, because, as I say, I haven't got enough time. But we do need certain resources in order to do our job well. At work, do you have the opportunity to do what you do best every day? That's kind of a lot of the strengths that became the offshoot with Marcus Buckingham. In the last 7 days, have you received recognition or praise? So here we go, right here, one of the Q12, have I had recognition or praise? Now, remember that's a generic term. How we've talked about different people. Does your supervisor, or you can see how old this was, it was done early, a few years ago, but your manager or someone at work seem to care? Get one of your values, care. And by care, that could mean they come in the morning and say, good morning, how was your weekend? Yeah. Or, look, I've got a role coming up for you. So, again, care is open to interpretation. There's more data behind this to say exactly what these mean. Is there someone at work who encourages your development? And I'm a great believer that most people like to feel they are growing. Now, the speed and the way they grow at work is very different, again, it's different to the people. At work, do your opinions seem to count? Does it matter that you exist, that you have a voice? And I hear a lot of people who are demotivated saying nobody listens, but you know, it goes and blows here. I say give a suggestion and manager does something else. And then, do I buy into the bigger picture? Yeah, is there a mission, is there a vision, and do I feel part of it? That's really important. I think that's another one. Are your fellow employees committed to doing quality work? Or is it that you come in every day trying to give your all, but actually eight people who work around you are just slackers? Because that will demotivate work time. Now, this one, it's written, the research was originally American, so people tend to get a bit over this one. But do you have a best friend at work? Means, is there somebody at work that you can talk to? And you'd be amazed how many. It doesn't mean that you go out socially and that's kind of what we would probably in the UK classify as a best friend, but do you have someone you can go to and talk to?
I don't think you've used the word best friend since I left school.
No, I know. That's why I'm saying, A, the wording is slightly different, B, it is very good. In the last 6 months, has someone at work talked to you about your progress? And in the last year, have you had opportunities to learn and grow? So there's a lot in here about development and growth, feedback. So that's what I mean by engagement. Let's get away from happy.
Well, I think the only point that ties into perhaps you'd feel... like your job's something you'd rave about, is the thing that does it play to your strengths. All the other things, it's just nice to have, so kind of makes it not an awful place to work. But most people seem to go on a Sunday, oh, I've got work in the morning. And I'm kind of like, why do people do that? Because they should be going,
Why do you think they do it?
Because when I delve into it, often they go, oh, I don't like it. And actually, a lot of those boxes could be ticked, but I think it's probably that it doesn't play to their strengths. So they're not feeling really fulfilled.
So they're in the wrong role.
Yeah,
maybe with a bad manager. And maybe
they might have all the other things ticked.
Right.
But I think it's that play to your strengths, I think, is what makes you feel happy in a job. I think if you're doing stuff that you're good at and enjoy doing, then you're probably quite happy doing that
Marcus
job.
Marcus Buckingham will be proud of you.
That's only one point out of 12, isn't it?
Which is what I think there's, you know, people aren't that easy. You know, people are complicated. There's lots of different things. They change all the time. And some of those will probably have more weighting than others. But the lesson is, and this is where this sort of brings us back to what we're talking about, which is if we know that actually people being engaged has a massive impact on the bottom line, what is the single biggest impact on how people feel at work?
Their manager.
It is. It really is. And that is something like 50-70%. So 50-70%, I'll check the statistics, but they're pretty high. 50-70% of how I feel on a day-to-day basis at work is impacted by my manager.
That's why I do my one-to-one. Mm.
So, how well this manager does at keeping engagement high is where the leadership styles comes in. If you read the article, don't worry, it doesn't work. Yeah? How well, and whether you get this right, choosing the right leadership style is driven by what? So So choosing the right behaviour with the right people, as I said, someone saying at the right time, is about, yeah, exactly. There's no trick questions here. Is your emotion intelligence? Yeah? So that's kind of the formula in the business case, not particularly beautifully drawn. I've kind of tried to put it. If anyone ever comes up with a graphic that will make this... Oh, the other one, in the UK that we have is best places to work. Has anyone been in an organisation where that's... Yeah, so again, if you've ever filled out the questions for that, you'll see many of the categories will map back to Q12. So next time you fill out an engagement survey at work, we'll come across one, compare it against Q12, and the only ones that are often in addition are sort of division-specific or company-specific questions. And there's usually quite a lot now about work-life balance and equality.
So
here, well-being is your work-life balance, so best places to work, and that kind of ramp that up a bit. Fair deal is about compensation, and do I feel, you know, the contract is fair. And then corporate responsibility, that's another one that you've seen added, kind of added, beginning something there. But all the others are what we would expect from the original research. So you can see that original Gallup research, Q12, done back in whenever, 1990s, has sort of sprouted into this mass industry, into, you know, engagement in companies, rightly or wrongly, and I'm not saying it's the answer. But what I am saying is you as the manager have a massive impact on how people feel at work, and how well you do that is down to your emotional intelligence. So I do think that makes it more tangible. So, that's what that diagram tries to show, but I'm really not really. It's spent hours, but I really can't get one. So anyway, let me think. Okay, let me go through this, and then we'll do a kind of debrief of both EQ and leadership styles, otherwise we're going to run out of time. So, there are six leadership styles. How many of you have read the article? Two people, three people?
Yeah,
I've
read it.
The, what was it called? I gave you three to read, albeit quite legally.
I've definitely read it.
Yeah, I've definitely.
It was either primal leadership or what makes leaders, or what was it called? What leaders, not what leaders do. The other one.
Why would someone want to be...
This one, leaders.
That's it, leadership that gets results. So the three that are on Moodle are the ones to read about what we're covering now. I've got some questionnaires that if you are A, writing the paper on your own leadership, and B, if you're just in a general navel-gazing mode, I will give you to either do here or probably more likely to be done right now. And if you are really, really into it, and had I known we were only going to be this number, I would have had a booklet for everyone, but I have some booklets that talk about the leadership styles from the Hay Group. And I would like probably to offer them first to people who are doing it as a credit, only because I haven't got enough, but I will try and get hold of some more if I've got them banging around my office at home. But the really relevant pages I have copied for you. What it also does is just go into each of the styles, but that's in the article. So there's not that much more. Unless you are writing the paper on your own leadership, then I think do come and ask me, and I'll... I will give you a copy or bring one next week, because it will make you do some more self-reflection, but you may not need to do it anymore, you may have had enough. Anyway, two styles, for those of you who haven't read the article, dissonant and resonant. A resonant is where you choose the right style with the right person at the right time, and it's all smooth and lovely and has a good reaction. Dissonant is kind of when you create a negative emotion around. And what this particular research by the Hay Group and Daniel Goleman found is there are sets of behaviours that lead into six styles. Okay? And it's a bit, again, like a graphic equaliser. In an ideal world, you should, great leaders would have the ability to do all of these six styles. Okay? It is more likely, however, that you are probably good at one or two of them. The analogy that they use in the article is of a golf player. Now, I'm not a golf player, so you talk about handyman with a tool belt, but let's stick with the golf for now. When you're playing golf, for those of you who are golf players, you will choose a particular club for a particular shot, dependent on the terrain, the weather, and I'm sure a number of other things that I wouldn't know about. And then you'd get a good shot if you chose it correctly. So the idea is that you are able to use all of these six styles interchangeably, okay, dependent on what is going on. What I tend to find in life is that, and it's very much dependent on the situation, okay? What I tend to find is people are predominantly good in one or two. Not good, that's the wrong word. Predominantly exhibit one or two sets of behaviours more than the others. That makes sense? What I have got, actually, which might be helpful as we go through, is just a quick overview. Quick overview of the styles. So let me talk through them, and as I talk through them, what I'd like you to think about is your leadership and how you behave, and which of these do you think you do more of or less of. You can do 360s on this, so it is something, you know, not that I'm offering it, but because I think it's, you know, there's cost involved, but you can fill out a questionnaire and get other people to fill it out on you and get some sense of it. I think sometimes it's useful as a self-reflective tool, and then you can always talk through the six styles and say to someone, which do you think I don't use enough and which do you think I'm, you know, overuse? And that's one way of getting feedback in a very non-directional way.
I thought one thing that I found quite useful, partly because I came up with the two worst styles, can be context related. This gave Microsoft as an example, and you know, if you're working for a company that really wants the bad ones, that could be fine.
Yeah. And so, all of these, I definitely do not want to pass judgment over any of these, but what I would say is, this is just an easy way to think about it. So the style that you choose is driven by your emotional intelligence, i.e. do you get it right, have you got the ability to change your behaviour? And what it needs to be dependent on is obviously your awareness of yourself and your ability to manage your emotions and manage your behaviour. Your ability to, so this is sort of the personal competence in EQ terms, this is the social competence in EQ terms. So, have you got an ability to read the other person or read the organisation, etc.? So, the other person. And then, most importantly, the situation. So, for example, one of the styles is directive. Now, typically, the old command and control leadership is thought to be passé. You know, I'm going to tell you what to do, get on and do it, or else. However, if the building was on fire, situation, my levels of emotional intelligence wouldn't necessarily care how you felt about it, and I would do it in a way that probably, hopefully, just came across as direct. I would say, the building's on fire, don't, you know, leave everything, we're leaving now, and we're going out of this exit, move. So I would be very directive. And that would be an appropriate use of that style, dependent on the situation. One of the models that we've already talked about that I think helps on this spectrum is situational leadership, i.e. people's skill and will. So, for example, one of the styles would be coaching. So if, for example, the situation is, I've got loads of time, I've got an individual who would like to invest some time in to increase their levels of engagement, I've recognised that, I've got coaching ability, and the other person's skill is okay, you know, they know a little bit about it, but not a lot, they're very motivated. My choice is to use the coaching style. So in that situation, I've chosen the right style, and it has a positive impact on them and their performance. Yeah? So that's the kind of mental process that I think people with high levels of EQ just do intuitively. But as we're learning, and obviously in all learning, we like to break these models down into something quite functional. That's how I teach it, if that makes sense. Yeah? So let's go through the six styles quickly, and then we'll have a quick play with them before we close. So the visionary, as it says, I'm not going to go through every single bullet point, but there's the other thing, just to mention, this is, again, very frustrating, but the terminology in the booklet and the article, they've upgraded the language, so this used to be called authoritative. Now, so you might want to put both terms down, because dependent on when the article was written will depend on what they call it. The reason they stopped, why do you think they stopped calling it authoritative?
It's going to be sort of authoritarian.
Exactly. Yeah. So people just misinterpreted it. So that's the only reason they changed it.
Coercive.
So I'll go through both of the terms as we go through it. So this is about if you, you know, want to set a compelling vision for your team in which they can buy into, this is when you would use this style. So if we go back to our triangle, with what types of people would it work or not work, this style? Level and skill and will. Skill and or will. You have to do both. So I'm going in, I'm the man. Let me give you a scenario now. Would it be appropriate if I go in and I've got a team that are equally, if not more, technically competent than me? So my peers, but either the same or more technically competent than me, and I go in and say, here is the vision for our team. Would that be appropriate?
No.
Why?
Because they would feel like they were being undermined and you were, you know, trying to take control, so that if they felt on the same level as you, they would want to be engaged and involved. And
right. Completely agree. So for that situation, dependent on the others, I wouldn't choose this style. So in light of that, what would be a good example of when I would be visionary? I'd go in and say, here's the big I am. I'm at the front of the team. Here's the vision for the team. I'm going to present it to you, team. When would it be either appropriate situationally or dependent on the types of people? Yeah.
If you have superior knowledge to them of the subject and they have willingness to buy and build a new team.
Yeah. So I've gone in. Maybe it's a brand new team. They don't know anything about it. They're more junior to me and we've gone through a period of change. And actually, we just need to get going. So I might go in and say, present a vision for the team. And it would probably land better than if it had been people who actually want to be part of it, which leads them to participate. Does that make sense? So it's thinking about how I do things. And on this one, because, you know, it may be people that are more junior or it may be in a period of change, so that's another situation that this might be appropriate. You know, business has been through turmoil, nobody knows what's going on, and therefore I might come in and have to provide some clarity. It may not be for long, I may then ask for input, but I may go in with a visionary style initially. Okay? Mm-hmm. So that's the first one, lots of other ways of doing it. Coaching style, when would that be appropriate? I might give you an example. So if it was someone who has degree of skill, high will, and we've got the time. You know, I'm not going to be coaching someone if you've got a deadline that's at the end of the week. Yeah? May give them some spot feedback, that's different to what I call coaching. Okay? Affiliative, when would we use this? Primary objective is to create harmony among other people. So this is strong, usually, you know, amongst people who, in Myers-Briggs terms, have a very strong F preference. They're much more, somebody with if you look at the McClelland values, people who are all about affiliation, I think, yeah, is the value in his three bands, social motives. When would we want to use this? What situations?
Is it where there's a skilled team, where the team is demotivated, broken?
Yeah, could be. If it's a bit broken, a bit fragmented, if people are not going on, you want to bring them together, you might use much more of what we call the supportive type behaviours, listening, questioning, asking them how they are, what their input is. When else? I think during turbulent times, we don't do enough of it. Business, you know, there's a crisis, business is going wrong, we don't check in with people, we don't ask them how they feel, we kind of assume, and also we don't want to go there because, oh my goodness, can't do anything about it. But I think it's underutilised. During periods of change, massive change, we need to up the kind of supportive behaviours, sets of behaviours. Not all the time, remember this is, you can change your style in a meeting, but we need to think about, are we doing enough of this? And we need to think about, well, what would it look like? Point. What would affiliative style look like? What would I be saying? What would I be doing? This is getting it down to a real behavioural level.
I think it probably depends on the change. For example, if you've got a merger and teams are going to have to be mixed up, getting them all affiliative at that point wouldn't be great because they won't mix up into the new team so well. So
think, what would you do? There's a great example.
I would be trying to keep them a bit more not as a coherent whole if you're looking to merge teams to other teams in the future. So you know that's coming in 6 months. I'd say you don't necessarily want the teams really structured and going on lots of friendly interaction type events to make them all happy and working as a team, I think perhaps actually I'd just lose that skill. I wouldn't be developing that skill in that scenario. Communication's important. I think when you're trying to keep people in the dark in a scenario like that, it's a bit of a tough one, because visionary doesn't fit in for this. None of the ones we've talked about don't think fit in so far. I'm not sure if one of the next ones will.
So you've got two organisations, you want to keep cultures coming together.
A merger of businesses, which will require layoffs and new teams being formed.
See, I would see a massive need for that during the period.
Okay.
Because affiliative doesn't mean, you know, lovey-dovey, give me a big hug, come on, we've all got to get on. What it does mean is the empathy piece, which is the questioning, the listening,
okay,
the hearing, because they're going through the emotional curve, you know, the Kubler-Ross curve, and therefore a lot of it is about helping them through their emotional journey.
Well,
that's why a lot of mergers go.
I was picking up on that first thing, promoting friendly interactions among co-workers, making the team stronger at that point. Is a lot of them and us. So say you put two businesses together, making them both feel like them and us is not a great thing to do at that point.
No, but
and that would do
I
that.
Agree. So I guess one way of doing it could be to create greater understanding around what the differences are. And that would be introducing them, not to be friendly, but just so I understand you a bit more, you understand me, how do I see you, how do you see me, and that can be done.
That might not be possible if no one knows there's going to be... I'm talking, you know, you've got two businesses, they're about to merge, your teams don't know about it, but you need to manage them still.
Oh, well, if they don't know about it,
So I'm trying, you know, because I was going, that in that scenario, because I've been through a couple of those scenarios, I was like, that would be really counterproductive to getting your goal, and there are times when you want to keep teams a bit divide and conquer almost, which sounds horrible, but kind of not have them really all loving each other, because then if someone leaves, then the team's distraught, because one of these guys I've just got to know really well has now had to go, sorry. And so there's times when I think this management style could be a bad thing.
Well, there's no roadmap for how this merge is going to go, so you'll be, I suppose, quite shrewd about how much you share with
the absolutely, but you still have to manage your team.
Concern yourself about this if you've been like, well, there's two companies, and in 6 months' time, they'll merge, someone lay off half of them.
Yeah.
I think if you don't use that and it comes to the 6 months down the line, you're going to be laying people off, then you're going to have the whole survivor syndrome, anger with the organisation. So it's the planning of it and the leading up to it, being savvy. But at the time of the announcement, you might need to be just very visionary or very directive. This is what's happening, guys.
Yeah.
But I think if you don't follow it up very quickly with, but you are valued, we want to hear from you, and that's affiliative.
Yeah.
Think of it as very...
Because it sounds lovely flexible. That promoting friendly interactions among co-workers, and I typically think, oh, that's an awesome thing to do, but I've seen scenarios where, actually, you don't want them, even though they're still a team, you
don't
want to...
Don't take it as literally of what's written on the bullet points.
But it's part of it, isn't it? If you take... Because you'd say, oh, right, we'll do some team events then, but there's times when that isn't the right thing at all.
And that's your judgment, and that's your EQ, driving the right... sets of behaviours. And you can't, let's face it, you cannot put behaviour into six buckets. You can't. But what you can see is trends and make choices about more supportive or more directive behaviours. And that's what this is meant to do, is just get you to reflect on what you're doing and how you're doing. Participative, this is all about involving people. So if we take the first scenario about, well, it wouldn't work if I went in and gave the vision to a group of very senior or more competent technical experts than myself, I might do it in a participant way, which might sound a bit like, look, I've got an idea about where we want to go, but I want to hear from you. Let's work on it together. So this is about let's do it together. So again, high skill, high will, I think if you're going to use participative, you need them to have the nous and also have the willingness. And situations where you need to create buy-in. So I think, you know, the merger example is a good one. You've got to get people's buy-in, so you're going to have to involve them, and that's why, you know, you see a lot of organisations during mergers asking for input, asking for your advocates, asking for people to get involved. People are more likely to commit to a decision if they're involved or feel they've been consulted. Okay. And then the two dissonant are pace setting and directive. So pace setting is very much about, I'm in front, I'm working really hard, you better keep up or else. So you wouldn't tolerate slackers, you wouldn't tolerate anyone who didn't keep up. So it's okay in the short term, you know, the situation being a crisis or short term, or it's a project that's, you know, high profile, and it's okay if you've got people who are equally as competent and have got the drive, same drive as you, but too much of this will lead to what?
Exhaustion.
Yeah, burnout, complete burnout. And people, you know, well, probably won't work for you again, but with the right people in the right situation, it's okay. I'm not saying don't do it. But I know lots of managers who actually do this all the time. And not only are they burnt out, but people are burnt out too. And then the directive style is about just do it and do it now. And again, you know, there is a time and a place for it, but overuse of it is more likely to lead to negative performance sooner than, you know, overuse of any of the other styles. Overuse on any of these. If you're too affiliative, you're going to be a pushover and a softy. If you're too, I got criticized of being too coachy because I would just ask questions. Well, what do you think? How do you think you might? And they're like, Julia, just tell us. Yeah? So overuse of any one style is not a good thing, I think, as a general manager or slash leader. But you need to know and have an ability to be able to flex your style across all six. Okay? So, I won't go through the examples. But what I will do, just in the last 15 minutes, is again, in your pairs, what I'd like you to compare, I'm going to come round with the handouts. What you've got, just so you know, is this is just a very short questionnaire. This questionnaire is the A3 one. You just fill it out and mark, you know, how strongly you agree with it. And that gives you just an indication. I don't think it's statistically significant. It's they've cut it down, usually 2 or 3 pages. This will give you an indication of which of the styles you're more likely to use than the others. Then the second, which is exercise 2, you have to think about a situation right now that you're in, so managing right now. Because it may well be that actually you're being very directive, but that's exactly what the situation requires. Then it's okay. Do you see what I mean? Now, if you were still doing that a year from now, and the team had changed, and they had all become very competent, and the business wasn't in crisis, I would question whether you were using the right style. Yeah? So the style that you choose is dependent on the situation. So you map those two, and then what you do is plot them onto this sheet. And all this does is tell you where you are against a normed group. So if you're answers to exercise 1 come in the dark at the top, it's probable that you're overusing that style, which may be okay if that's what the situation demands, but it may not be okay. And then in the middle, you're doing it as much as the average person, the general population, and if it's at the bottom, you're underutilizing it compared to the general population. So that's just your normed data. So in your pairs, what I'd like you to do is just quickly reflect on the questionnaire you filled out on the on emotional intelligence from the book. What are you personally taking from that? What have you learned? And what's the one or two things you're going to focus on as a leader? As you do that, I will bring this questionnaire out.
Okay, there we go. Explain your decisions, don't just make them.
Hmm?
That's my
right.
Relationship management strategy 1. Okay, I quite like that one. I think that could be quite useful.
What's that?
Explaining my decisions, not just making them.
Is reflect on these styles, read the articles if you haven't read them, reflect on the styles and just be very self-aware and observant on your behaviour at work and whether you think it's the right style dependent on the situation. That's the first thing. If you're brave enough talk to someone who you think will give you some good feedback. Talk them through very briefly. You might use that one pager I've given you on the six styles. Get them to read through it, and or give it to them and say, look, tomorrow I'd love to get some feedback on which of these you think I do too much of or too little of. That's a very, you know, non-threatening way of getting some feedback on the six styles. So up to you, but definitely do some work on...
We
ran out of A3 paper,
so
that's
coming
in bits.
Yeah, so yeah, should have
so
three.
Be the other half.
Should have three bits of paper, isn't it? Three?
And exercise two should have two. Yeah, that's the other half of exercise two. And then that's standalone. Because
right,
that's
so
where you're going to plot everything.
Should,
so there's exercise one, exercise two, and then the profile.
There's two A3s and an A4. Split. Yeah.
This is exercise two, so these two go together. So imagine it's A3, yeah.
What do you get from your EQ?
Well, I wanted self-management, so that doesn't tell you anything about the leadership.
What did you get in your breakout scores?
I think 69, 57, 61, and 61.
That was quite was lowest in relationship management. What was your lowest one?
Self-management.
Okay, that's interesting. And then we'll give you some suggestions.
Yeah, and self-management was the one that, like, breathing, count to 10.
Quite like the breathing one.
Yeah, counting to 10 is, I thought another one that's really good is in a meeting. Well, I've been going, you know, because that's kind of it. Just having a go.
Yeah.
I
pretend to take notes.
Pretend to take notes.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
I guess
stupid
question.
It's genuinely stupid.
So the number I'm putting in is how much I agree with the data. What's the relevance of A, B, C, D, E, F?
You've got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6.
Well, I don't. I either.
Oh, yeah. If you really want to dive into EQ and all the research, the website I'd recommend is the EI Consortium.org. So that's a very good website with lots of reports and information about EQ. And you can sign up and they send you loads of stuff as well. So that's in the slide.
I just made it up.
And then one of the questions which I'll set the essay paper. Yeah.
Where's that? We found a new style.
I like to see.
One is
fake it, team me.
Preferably one you've had personal experience of, but it could be someone else. It's just more difficult if you haven't. So that'll be one of three papers. It'll either be this, your leadership, which is what I've been pushing in the sense of giving lots of self-reflection to do, or on a leader that you know. So that'll be three questions. So I'll have a quick think through that question anyway for next week. Do the work around the leadership styles and reflection. We'll wrap all this up next week.
On those three questions, we'll pick one.
So yeah, there's one is reflective essay on your leadership using.
Yeah, but I'm doing quite a directive way.
I got the impression you were doing it. Talking about someone else. So just doing it in third person.
I set the stage, See,
you do the
assignment. I do the vision.
Yeah.
And I tell them this is the vision.
Which is, as long as you, but do you do this?
Which is worth 100%.
Yeah, that's probably not. Yeah.
But that sounds like an awesome way of doing it, because you didn't want to surrender authority, did you? But this
I need to look at when I'm about to
the best way to get
planet around now.
That's the bit I'm kind of going with. That's the experiment I'm doing at the moment. I've given
you a sound like you could really get good at that.
Yeah, definitely that for me is a key one.
Because they're not all little mini years, are they? They're going to have all sorts of colours, whoever they are.
Ultimately, I'm managing a team.
Let's look at the diary,
really
so I get a sense of it.
I mean, it's part of
how
the programme to throw you into an area where you don't know anything about. So you're managing the team rather than managing the detail.
Right, okay.
So they are. They're SMEs. I'm not.
Right.
But they're very technical.
That's
they're not very strategic.
So I'll probably
so they've been
give
doing
you a bit
the same things for years.
Yeah.
If you want to get it done...
Actually, results, anything. If you look at the results, it's just trending down.
Okay.
I could
but is that just because the industry is trending down, or because their performance, their performance
so
relative to
we'll
the business?
We'll talk about it next week. If you can get it done within 4 weeks, I will get them all done before I go out. But if there's anyone going to straggle, then it's just a real pain. So So let's talk about it next week. But if you think you can get a paper written within the 4-week deadline, then that's fine. Then I can get them marked.
How long is it?
1,500 to 2,000 max. It's not long. I will give you very clear outline of what I'm expecting next week. Very clear.
All right, that's great.
Okay, right, well, we'll call it a wrap, but do the homework, do the reading. If you're going to be writing the paper on yourself and you want one of the booklets, put your hand up. That's easy. Next week we'll look at teams. So it's the two articles on teams, the Lencioni and the Katzman, and there's one other which I will put on Google.
I enjoyed that.
Any other questions? So, in the two-pager I sent you, one was by Patrick Lencioni. I can't remember the title off the top of my head, but it's in there. The other one was Katzman. It was a persuasion one, wasn't it? Don't worry about that one. And then there will be another one, which by Larson and the Fasco, which I will find. We need to start on time next week.
And the sandwich.
Always be the same. So, because we're doing an exercise first.
Right, I'm going to go and pack my train.
Yes, I'll see you next
Monday, right?
Okay, well done. Thanks very much.
See you next week.
See you next week.